Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Dateline, Philippines, Manila, the capital, AP. China warned that a deepening security alliance between the United States and the Philippines should not harm its security and territorial interests and interfere in long simmering territorial disputes in the South China Sea. To unpack this, I welcome my colleague and friend Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, writing at Gatestone Newsweek and The Hill. And we're very pleased to also have Jonathan Ward, the author of the about to be released, The Decisive Decade, American Grand Strategy for Triumph Over China. Gentlemen, I put all of this on the table before you and mentioned that Tsai Ing-wen's visit to the United States, New York, Central America, and Los Angeles was the predicate, again, for the PRC staging elaborate warplane and warship exercises off of Taiwan and making the usual rhetorical threats about the future. It was also a predicate for what you'd have to say is the U.S. response, which was to stage very large, significant, and fresh news games, exercises with the Philippines, following on the recent success of the Biden administration to sign an agreement with the Philippines to base U.S. forces not only in Luzon, the northern island, but also in Palawan, an island that bridges the important South China Sea, where China has built artificial island fortresses. So I begin first with Gordon on this latest Chinese threat about the exercises by the Philippines and the U.S. Gordon, a very good day to you. How do you measure threatening suddenly the Philippines? They are threatening the neighborhood, but heretofore I thought they were on a peace mission with the Philippines. Good evening to you, Gordon.
Good evening, John. The most recent threats to the Philippines are really driving Manila much closer to the United States. When Rodrigo Duterte was president, Beijing could intimidate him because he was very anti-American, very pro-China. But now that there's been a new president, we've got Marcos Jr., really what we have is a Philippines that is alive to the threats that China poses to Philippine integrity. So right now, things are going in a very bad direction for Beijing.
Jonathan, a very good evening to you. The Philippines being threatened follows the Taiwan threats, which are routine, the threats against the U.S., threats against Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, meeting with Tsai Ing-wen. Threat, threat, threat. Anything new here, Jonathan, or is it the same old mimeograph machine in the basement of the foreign ministry?
Well, John, I think we're beginning to see what the world and global playing field of Cold War II actually looks like. I mean, from a live, active war in Eastern Europe waged by Vladimir Putin with Beijing's support, to the military geography of the West Pacific, which in some ways has not changed. Of course, the U.S.-Philippines Defense Treaty goes back to 1951. It's one of the most long-standing treaties we have, and it's absolutely integral, I think, to the defense of Asia as it has been throughout the 20th century. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of activity on a lot of different fronts here, but I think we have to realize that we're facing two, totally hostile adversary states in Moscow and Beijing. They're working together. And Beijing's threats against Taiwan, which on one hand, they're trying to normalize. And I think they're using any, sort of improvement in U.S. Taiwan relations as a hook to hang new exercises and sort of further, in a way, testing of their military capabilities to hang it on that. But, you know, these are all things that they, have planned to do, and they've built a military that's designed for this. So showing the world that they can do maneuvers such as encirclement of the island of Taiwan is something that I think we should expect to see more of. And then whether or not they make the decision to undertake real military action is something that the U.S. still has a vote in that through deterrence and working with allies like the Philippines is going to be incredibly important to securing the military geography of Asia. And ideally, if we're successful at that to show in Beijing that any such attacks will not succeed.
Gordon,
but in the meantime, their diplomatic push has engaged the entire world, from France to Brazil. And, you know, I think we're in for a very tough contest.
Gordon, you have a question for Jonathan.
Jonathan, in the wake of World War II, it took the U.S. quite some time to realize that the Soviet Union was an adversary and not an ally. There was the long telegram from George Kennan, the Article X in Foreign Affairs, but eventually we got there. Right now, it seems that there is reluctance in the elites in New York and Washington to acknowledge a new Cold War, especially on the part of the Biden administration. The president won't talk about it. How long do you think it's going to take us to get to the realization that the world is dividing into camps?
Well, I think it either comes through events or it comes through intelligent foresight. And at this point, understanding the intentions, the strategies, the behavior of Russia and China, realizing that it's the same two figures, you know, the same two states that, you know, essentially defined Cold War One. I mean, these are, I think, things that we can come to appreciate just by looking at the facts in the world. But it's such a sea change, I think, for American strategy in a way that perhaps was less true of the first Cold War. I mean, in this case, the business interests that are still tied to the People's Republic of China, the fact that, you know, we've went out of our way to integrate China into the global economy, you know, that is going to change many deep a priori for those who led that policy or benefited from it over decades. So, you know, of course, at the same time that Xi Jinping goes to Moscow and our own CEOs went to Beijing, I mean, that shows you the enormous contradiction that we have in U.S. strategy. So, you know, I think in this case, in a much more global world, and certainly not in a post-war world like we had in the Second World War, the understanding is harder. I mean, you know, it's been several generations since we've had to deal with a challenge of this kind with this level of intensity. I think the situation we're in, you know, as you pointed out, does resemble in some ways the early Cold War, when it was much more contested, much more dangerous. You know, we had not yet figured out how to stabilize any of this or even a comprehensive strategy towards the primary adversary. But that's where we have to go now.
A Tale of Two Cities, a visit in Beijing by the president of France, that would be Paris, and by the president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, who comes from Germany, that would be Berlin. A Tale of Two Cities. On the one hand, Emmanuel Macron is celebrated, feted, offered champagne toasts and major warm events with the Chinese VIPs. On the other hand, Ursula von der Leyen is met at the airport and otherwise left out, I read, from important conversations. Ursula von der Leyen is arguably much more important for the European Union than Emmanuel Macron, who is an outlier in many of his foreign policy remarks. Does Beijing understand the significance of this, that von der Leyen is speaking of China as a predator and an aggressor, and that trade must be very careful because of China's compulsion to surveil its customers? On the other hand, Mr. Macron seems somewhere in the 20th century about why can't we all be friends? Is China aware of this?
Well, look, I think the Macron visit, and as you've laid out there, you know, on one hand, China's primary goal would be to split Europe and the U.S. up. I mean, that's a, you know, a diplomatic would be an enormous breakthrough for them to have our alliance system not cohere around the problem of the rise of China and the threat it poses to the entire free world. So, you know, they know that they're engaging two very different points of view there. I mean, Ursula has said that China's a systemic rival, and I think represents that point of view. And, you know, a much more accurate point of view. And then Macron has done something, you know, in my mind, incredibly stupid and foolish by going out and, you know, bringing a CEO delegate, bringing Airbus over there. I mean, playing the role of, I mean, speaking openly about how they, you know, France should not follow the United States, and, you know, that basically we should not get involved in crises that are far away, even as he asks the U.S. to participate in Ukraine, and even as our own foreign policy debate over that conflict is beginning to divide. So I think that is not what we want. I mean, much of the 21st century will depend on whether the democracies can stay on the same side, can confront Russia and China with unity. You know, if the US and EU are able to work together, if the allies from Europe to Asia can work together, then we're going to win this contest. But if we can't, Then it's just going to be, you know, relatively easy pickings for China around the world. And you see the way in which they're able to engage and do diplomacy in the Middle East with Saudi Arabia and Iran, the way that they have Lula going to China. And of course, that trade relationship between China and Brazil is very robust. And now to have a major European country go and say the worst possible things at the worst possible time. You know, I've always tried to explain to people that this is an entirely global game. It is not just about the Indo-Pacific. It is about the entire world. And China is playing that game, I think, very successfully right now. And it should be alarming to us. And we need, you know, a global strategy that creates the coherence of the alliance system, you know, new initiatives in the emerging world so that we can roll China back in the emerging world and ultimately try to build the world around the PRC without their influence. And right now they're showing us what their influence looks like. And I think at a relatively early stage, I mean, imagine if you have 10 more years, you know, through the end of this decade, China's growth, its military buildup, all of that, then their diplomacy is just going to be overwhelming. So you know, an ally like Macron, I think that was a disservice to the entire free world, and he's been met with universal opprobrium on this. And it was you know, preposterous for him to do that. Absolutely crazy.
Oh, Gordon, your thoughts, 30 seconds about the Macron visit. Is it something that's behind us, or is this going to be a controversy going forward?
Yeah, I think Beijing made a big mistake by maligning van der Linden and by feeding Macron, because as Jonathan points out, Macron has gotten so much in the way of criticism in Europe, not to mention the United States. And I think this is ultimately going to work to our benefit, not to China's.
Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, and Jonathan's new book, Looking Forward, The Decisive Decade, American Grand Strategy for Triumph Over China. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart, or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.